Now, it's The 6 with the Jason and John Show.
Matt Moore covers the NBA for the Action Network, and he joins us now. Matt, obviously, it certainly feels trivial in the times that we are currently living in, but let's just kind of dive into sort of what the NBA has. I don't know if there's been a final decision, but it seems like we are trending towards the 22-team plan. And maybe having a play in for those final spots. When you look at sort of the plan and their ideas, do you like this? Do you think this is just? What do you make of it?
So I think first of all, thanks for having me. Hope you guys are doing well, and everybody listening is hanging in there. My opinion is that this is the wrong way to go about it. So there's a lot of things at play here. There's the agendas of the teams that have authority that are at the top of the NBA ladder in terms of title contention. There's the agenda of the owners that are desperate to recoup some of the money that they've lost because of the pandemic. You have the players that are looking for the safest possible environments, not only from the virus, but also in terms of play. And you have the NBA that's looking to maximize the opportunity. And all these things are kind of in conflict with each other. Players, teams, everybody's in agreement. They're going to need warm-up games. Like, you can't just do... The idea for a lot of us was like, oh, they'll just like have some like warm-up games and some scrimmages and then go into the playoffs. Can't do that. Like, they need actual game environments to get warmed up, like even the star players. Like, it can't be like preseason environment. You have to have actual games. And so that has to be factored in. And once you take that approach, then you have to say, okay, we're going to do that. If you're not going to do the group play, then you're going to need regular season games. But the problem is these games are inherently – not going to reflect the actual schedule. They're right. going to be shorter. It's only going to provide certain opportunities to certain teams. And ultimately, it's more games of a regular season that's too long to begin with anyway. So it's really ultimately kind of pointless. The play-in format, to me, is fine in that it gives these teams that could have caught Memphis a chance. It's just that it seems so transparent to be like, I mean, no, we just want to give them a chance. I mean, hopefully it's Zion and not Memphis. Like, come on. Like, if we're, are we doing this or are we not? Like, are we just taking the teams into the playoffs that are in or are we not? And the mix of these things, I think, is why I'm so bummed. I came around pretty quickly to the group play concept because of it addressed the need for warm-up games. It gave a different format. It allowed for an even opportunity. You could have 20 teams. They're now talking about 22, which means two more teams and everybody that's with them,
right,
increasing the risk of infection. To me, the plan doesn't make a lot of sense. It's the least appetizing compromise, but it's the only one that everyone can swallow given the agendas that are in play.
What should we expect from a young Grizzlies team in this situation that maybe feels like, hey, man, we've already earned our spot, but then is feeling like, but you're screwing us? I don't know, a young team that doesn't know any better, chance that you'll get a better version of them? We figure it'll be rusty for everybody. I'm curious what to expect from this young team that's never been in a situation like this before in terms of playoffs.
I think it's a pretty good opportunity, and the reason is if they get in, nobody's going to say they didn't deserve it because the deck was stacked against them, and they'll probably get a tough schedule of regular season games. Like, there will be attempts to knock them down, and if they make it in, like, that proves something outright. Like, that just proves something from the get-go. And honestly, like, in this situation, you're going to have a lot of the veterans that have bigger concerns either about their careers or free agency. They have a bigger perspective. They've won and lost playoff series. They've been up and down. For the young guys, it gets good because they haven't been. They're excited to be in the playoffs anyway, and they're playing with an edge because everyone's kind of stacked to try and get them out. That, to me, I think is actually an ideal situation versus a normal scenario in which you're just happy to be there.
Justice Winslow, what do you think? What should we expect, and what do you want to see?
I'm really excited for the idea of having multiple ball handlers because of how good Ja is off the catch. Like, this team just has so many guys that are fluid and versatile in what they can do. Like, they're not limited in just being one thing. And there's probably down the line, Ja's going to become like most NBA superstars where the ball's in their hands all the time. Mm-hmm. But now is the opportunity where you should take it to have a guy that ran points for Miami and give him the opportunity. The biggest thing is just the three-point shot because it's been inconsistent. And when it's been good, it's been awesome. And when it's been bad, it's been terrible. If he shoots well, then Memphis is going to be a really tough out. Like, I think that that and how he meshes with Jaren Jackson are the two biggest questions.
We are, of course, talking to Matt Moore, covers NBA for the Action Network. And then, you know, we've sort of been asking our NBA guests that we have on sort of just the remnants of COVID, and one of them, it feels like, is going to be a later season start date. I mean, the reality of the situation is, if you're the NBA, if you start your season on Christmas Day, you can really, I mean, you carve out April through August. You're just going to absolutely own the sports calendar, and you're going to own the American sort of sports conscious. I mean, is that the right long-term play for the NBA, you think, Matt?
Well, my wife is a teacher, so she's off in the summer, so I think it's terrible. I think it's a horrible idea, and they should definitely right. not do that so that I can keep having 3 months of vacation. No, I think it's good. I think, honestly, there's so many complaints every year about, like, why is there only baseball on in July? Like, why are we, like, left with nothing? And being able to own that, and especially because you can operate the offseason during the NFL, and those are big enough stories to compete with the NFL kind of news calendar during the regular season, that's actually a pretty smart move. It's going to, I think, work out a little bit better. The only question I have is, like, how do the players feel about it? And it seems pretty mixed. I think some players are like, yeah, it sounds fine. And some players are like, but I like being off in the summers when I can go nice places when it's warm and sunny. So, like, that to me is the only real question in play. A bigger question for me is about this season, because there's a lot of talk of, like, well, they're going to start on, like, Christmas. Okay, but preseason takes about a month, so that means November. Well, they're now starting on July 31st. That's the current plan, with a finish sometime in October. Well, if you finish in October and you're starting at the end of November for a December or for a Christmas start, that's like a month and a half off for some of these teams. That's a concern that I have about this year's calendar and how to do that adjustment.
I got to ask you, Matt, just because it's what we're all talking about, and it would seem, you know, ingenuine of me not asking. I'm just what you thought of what we saw over the weekend. We're all hoping that the NBA, and we saw a bunch of players come step forward and make statements, can sort of lead the way in terms of sports involvement, right, and fixing things as much as we can get them fixed. What'd you think of what you saw over the weekend?
I mean, look, I'm a middle-class white dude that grew up in Northwest Arkansas. Like, I'm not the person to talk about this, but I will say, like, I'm trying to amplify voices as much as I can.
You can have a role, absolutely.
Show the injustice that's going on. I'm trying to be the best ally that I can be. I think that the leadership we've seen is incredible. You got Jaylen Brown out there. This
Making
kid that is still so young. He drives down. He leads. He speaks. Like, that kind of leadership to me is just awe-inspiring. And you saw it from Malcolm Brogdon, and you're seeing it from Doc Rivers, and you're seeing it from the Coaches Association, and you're seeing it up and down. And I think it's good that we've seen the support that we've seen from the NBA. You want to see more, because this is a black league, and that needs to be a huge part of the identity and the support of it because of how dire the issue is. It all feels very overwhelming, but I think that the biggest thing I take away with is the strength of character of so many people involved with the NBA and their role in trying to affect change.
Yeah. Hey, well, man, great stuff as always. We appreciate the time, and stay safe.
Thanks, guys.
Yep. He is Matt Moore, covers NBA for the Action Network.
Did you see that drive, Jaylen? Down. Not just down, but holding a sign, leading the way. And he's from down there, but made the 15-hour drive. Saw Brogdon, too.
Yep.
Everybody's got a voice in this.
The Memphis Grizzlies are the latest to release a statement. I'll just read from the Memphis Grizzlies. They just released a statement a few moments ago. The Memphis Grizzlies stand squarely in opposition to racism and injustice. We condemn all acts of racial violence. It is ingrained in our culture and part of our ethos. And we are going to build on established initiatives in our community. With Memphis's history as a backdrop, the Grizzlies have been the host and facilitator of some powerful discussions on the intersection of race and sport in conjunction with the annual MLK Day celebration game. In the coming days, we will be collating and posting videos from the most recent forums and symposiums at Grizzlies.com, created in partnership with the National Civil Rights Museum. We hope making these meaningful sessions available will serve as a way to further educate and inform through the words and experiences of our Sports Legacy Award recipients and members of the NBA family. We will also be working with the National Civil Rights Museum to facilitate and amplify conversations specific to this moment in time.
We've been committed to the practice of mentorship since 2004, and in moments like these, we want to create a safe environment where participants in our mentorship programs can have an open and honest dialogue with each other. As such, the Grizzlies and its community partners, including the Memphis Grizzlies Foundation, will in the days and weeks ahead coordinate a series of virtual sessions for our mentors and mentees to discuss recent events and their efforts, both here in Memphis and across the country. Goes on a little bit more. We looked internally to understand what additional ways we could support all members of our organization and recognize that under our current time off policy, staff may have to make a financial sacrifice in order to exercise their right to vote. Knowing fundamentally that change happens at the ballot box, we've created a new category of paid time off to be used specifically in order to vote so that during local and national elections, our staff will never have to make a decision between voting or incurring a financial loss. Finally, we will work with the National Basketball Coaches Association and support the initiatives they put forward in our community. So there you go, a little bit of news. They have created a a paid time off to go vote. I thought that was sort of a guaranteed thing. I guess it's not, but it's good to know that they have made that change.
Oh, just much better than some of the other statements you've seen from teams that are basically just rhetoric. You know, racism is wrong. We're going to do everything we can, in the sense that there was substance to this release from the Grizzlies. Hey, here's what we're going to do. That's the part of it. The Mavericks were one that are, you know, and my gosh, you get the NFL's entire statement. Talk about that with Roger Goodell. But the Mavericks was one. Rebuilding takes a team effort. We'll rebound together. Okay, well, what do we do? So I appreciate the actual, you know, idea that there's some meat to it.
Jason Fitz is in front of the show. You can hear him every single day on ESPN Radio. First Take, Your Take. He's the man. He does it all, and he joins us. Now, Fitz, how you hanging in there, man?
Man, I'm hanging in good, you know, and for anybody that tuned in to First Take, Your Take today, I just want to be the first to let anybody know that doesn't know. I'm not on today. Stephen A. is on today, and that's not because I obviously don't want to talk about what's going on. It's because Stephen A. Wants to so much that, you know, he's Stephen A. and I'm not. So they're letting Stephen A. take First Take, Your Take today so that he can talk about what's going on in the country and get some things off his chest. And they're going to give him that platform for a couple hours. And I presume I'll be back tomorrow, and we'll keep these tough conversations going. And I'm anxious to say some of what's on my mind, but Stephen A. is going to have that platform today.
Well, you know, I read the New York Post. I know they love you up there. I know the executives love them some Jason Fitz, trust me. So don't look at this as any kind of indictment on your performance. But it is important, I think, to have diverse voices, in any form. If you were on today, Fitz, what would you say about what you've seen, you know, in our country? Obviously, you know, sports franchises and coaches have spoken out, more than ever before. Some statements much better than others. But what would you say if you were on today just about everything that we have witnessed in the United States of America the last few days?
You know, I think that if there's anything I've learned in the last week, I've always said that, you know, when I stand in front of a microphone, my job is to provide escapism, you know, and by providing escapism, whether I was playing the music or, you know, talking about sports, my hope is that when people come to listen to it, you can get away from everything that's going on. And I think I've learned that, you know, in and of itself. And, you know, I was talking to one of my peers that I love and respect a lot yesterday. And, you know, she said to me, she's like, you know, just the very principle of escapism is in and of itself privilege. And I think that this has been really eye-opening, because let's be real, I'm a middle-aged white guy. I will never know what it feels like to be pulled over by the police and wonder what's going to happen next. I'll never know what it feels like to be doing normal things and not know if I'm going to be safe and secure. And, you know, I think what's hit me in the course of the last week is that we need to be having more conversations that aren't just, you know, African Americans speaking on it, not just white people speaking about it. Like, we need to have more diverse conversations that aren't debates. ESPN's built on debates. Like, there are some times that you take the debating off, and you have real conversations with people that you love and respect about what it is like to be black in America today. And if you have those conversations and you listen instead of trying to jump all over what they're saying or try and make any presumptions, if you just hear the pain in people's voices, I mean, if that doesn't charge you to want to change the way you approach your daily life, what does? And, you know, I keep walking away from it saying that we've got to demand better, be better, do better from ourselves, from the people in our immediate social circles. We've got to stop asking everybody else to fix this. And we've got to start looking at it as individuals, as human beings, and saying, how can I be better today? And if I can be better to the people in my social circle and demand that they're better to the people in their social circle, I believe that over time we can affect change, but it takes listening, it takes talking, it takes being real, it takes being embarrassed through some of these conversations, and it takes really coming in and saying, I'm not going to allow tone to be certain ways around me, I'm not going to allow people to be treated certain ways around me, and I'm not going to allow people in my life to do things I wouldn't be proud of.
Why does it feel, well said, Fitzy, why does it feel different this time? Why has it hit the mainstream the way it has, Fitzy? I mean, it feels different than Eric Garner. It feels different than Mike Brown. You know, it feels like, you know, maybe some of it's the, you know, there's no sports to go to, right, to get out of it. You've got to watch. But why has this, you know, hit the mainstream the way it has? There's, you know, it feels like talking about sports today, at least to lead off, seems a little silly.
You're right. And I think it's hit harder partially because there's no sports, partially because we're in quarantine. And, you know, that's the other part of it. I've talked to so many of my friends about, even about the rage that's come from it. I feel like the rage is even bigger because it's not again and it's happening again. But as beautifully, beautifully written by Kareem Abdul-Jabbar in the LA Times, part of what we have to acknowledge right now is that even COVID-19 hit the African-American population harder than it hit everybody else. Because why? You know, lower profile jobs and, you know, living in places where they can't necessarily, as a large community, socially distance the same way. So you have a community that already feels like it's being attacked at this, by this virus at a different level. You have everybody bottled up and everybody feeling like they're in an awkward spot, and everybody feels like they're not in their normal. And then you have this on top of it. And I think it's been in many ways emotionally the straw that's broken the camel's back for a community that feels like it's been turned on, but also even for people that are just, you know, sitting around saying, okay, how am I supposed to react to this? We're very emotional right now because of everything going on in the world. And I, you know, sometimes I look at that as a good thing. You know, you can look at the emotion of it, and maybe it's finally just a breaking point in communication where everybody seems more receptive to it. But if that's the case, then this could be the best thing that ever came out of a pandemic. If we can learn how to have these conversations to get better at this area, like we come out of it better as a country. We just have to be open to that.
I do think that the this point in time in particular, you know, Jason and I talked about this, you know, last week. It's June 1st, which presumably would mean the NBA Finals, you know, would be, you know, cranking up or about to. So, you know, our attention spans would be, you know, probably at least divided or distracted. And I think now, because of everything that's going on, sports are canceled, like you mentioned, there's a pandemic, we have more bandwidth, so to speak, to pay attention to these issues that really do matter. And I think that's actually a really good thing the way it broke. Now, in terms of sports' role in all of this, because I do think there is a role for sports to play in this, you see even Nick Saban, right? Even Michael Jordan. Michael Jordan is not, we know, he's not been a guy that likes to delve into political issues to the point of frustration at times. He released a statement last night. Nick Saban released a statement over the weekend. What is sports' role in this to you, Fitz, in terms of, you know, societal change and what they can do and the kind of impact they can have?
Well, I think it's not only sports' roles, but also fans' role. I mean, you bet your butt, everybody knows I'm a Raiders fan. You bet your butt, I read that Raiders statement that Mark Davis last night issued, and I read it, you know, before I opened it to read it, I was nervous about it, because what I don't want is some blanket statement from the owner of the team that I'm the biggest fan of that doesn't say anything or that doesn't support what's going on. So I think that where sports can have a role is, A, it keeps the conversation going. B, we've already learned that sports offer an opportunity for diverse voices to be having this conversation. And, you know, I was talking to Elle Duncan about this a couple of days ago, and Elle even mentioned, you know, these conversations will be the best when what you have is a group of white people having them, not just, okay, we're gonna defer now to all of our black colleagues to have these tough conversations. So I think sports offers that opportunity of a larger, diverse audience is going to hear about it and going to be forced to at least listen to some of it. And then as fans, we're going to be watching how our teams react to it to make a real, you know, decision on what we're willing to support and what we're not willing to support. So, you know, that's part of where it comes together. I mean, sports in and of themselves are a meritocracy. And you know, I love that phrase in general because it makes me sound smarter than I am. But I always said the same thing in music. You know, music is rarely about what you like. When you're just auditioning for a gig, it's rarely about what race you are, what, you know, any of that. It comes down to, can you play, right? And same in sports. It's, can you play? And game respects game. So I think sports has a better opportunity because they're already, at least in theory, better diversified and more understanding, I think they have the opportunity to sort of show everybody how it can be done and how it should be done. So there's a lot of live by example in that sense. And, you know, and if anything, it's really awoken me in the last few days too, to just the general concept of stick to sports that so many people ask our athletes to do. And it's like, why? I mean, if you don't want to hear what they have to say, then don't follow them otherwise. But just because somebody's good at something doesn't mean they're not allowed to talk about something else. So I think the audience that sports have is part of what's going to heal.
What do you think of the NFL statement on Saturday, and particularly in light of, you know, you look at Kaepernick in that situation, and particularly, you know, with this line, the protesters' reaction to these incidents, it was from Goodell, reflect the pain, anger, and frustration that so many of us feel. And I just think for so many people, that statement rung so hollow. I've seen fits. I've had people, you know, Facebook us and say, look, I'm looking at the Kaepernick situation completely different. But do you think we've changed for the better on that, where a guy was completely ostracized and now we're looking back and saying, oh, well, he was right. Can we change fits from that feeling?
And that is a great question, because I think honestly what happened on the Kaepernick situation at this point today is that people are so dug in on the Kaepernick situation, they'd have to be willing to come out and admit that they were wrong mm-hmm. about it. And that's something I just don't know if society's willing to do, you know? And so you start to look at maybe the message, and if anything right now, if you look at the message that Colin Kaepernick was trying to get out, this should be a time where people have a better understanding to that message. The reason the NFL's statement feels so fraudulent is it doesn't really come out and say anything in a league that has had this issue constantly. And it's like, pay no attention to the man behind the curtain. The NFL seems to not care about it. And, you know, largely I think that's because so many NFL fans don't seem to make this a priority, but their players do. So to me, the NFL would have been much better suited to come out with a statement that actually talked about some of what they're going to do to keep these conversations going and how they feel they can help benefit and make a difference. And instead, they basically came out with a statement that said, don't know what we're going to do. Things really need to get better. And boy, this is a shame, right? And so that just, it just feels hollow. You know, the same statement coming out from the NBA would have resonated better than it had from the NFL, simply because we know the NBA, we know what the NBA is about. And at this point, we know what the NFL is about too.
Yeah, we are, of course, talking to Jason Fitz. He joins us every single Monday here on the show. Listen to him, except for today, on First Take Your Take. The NBA is coming back eventually. July 31st, it sounds like, is the date they have targeted to resume the season. Obviously, there is such a thing as you cannot be too careful, you know, when it comes to things like this. But is there any part of you, I mean, the Premier League, for example, in the UK, in England, which, you know, got hit harder per capita by COVID-19 than did the United States, they are coming back in a matter of 2 weeks, not, you know, months. Is the NBA... Is this why we're getting here and why it's taking this long, and is that frustrating? What do you make of sort of the NBA's much slower approach to, you know, the resumption of their season?
Well, I think part of that for the NBA has come back to the fact that, I'll go back to what Tim Bontemps said to me a while back on the show, that the NBA and the NBA Players Association have been doing this together lockstep every single way, step of the way. So when we get our official word from the NBA, the official statement, it's essentially are going to be agreed upon by the Players Association. Mm-hmm. So one reason I think it's taken a little longer is, unlike the NHL, which, for example, comes out and says, hey, Players Association is good with these dates, but we're not really sure how we're going to test or what we're going to do. There's a lot to still figure out. But here's what we're looking at. You know, the NBA is going to come out with a fully formed plan. So I think there's just been a little bit more caution. And then the other thing that makes everything difficult here is, what do you do in a world where you have competitive balance and you want to try and figure it out in a way that is fair and equitable to everybody, but every municipality can handle COVID-19 differently. So I think the set of circumstances here have made it particularly difficult, you know, to figure out. Now, that being said, you know, the entirety of the conversation in soccer in Europe has been about money too, because, you know, for the love of God, they do relegation over there. So can you imagine coming back and suddenly you come back, your guys aren't in shape, and you end up being relegated to a different league and losing millions of dollars, right? So there are difficulties all over the world, but I think the NBA has been so slow because they intend to be very calculated in their final decision, and it will come out and be, from everything I've heard, from the time that they announce what their plan is to the time that it gets fully approved, will be a blink of an eye and we'll be ready to go. So I think it's a large part of it.
Hey, baseball can't afford to mess this up, right, Fitzy?
Baseball has already messed
in
this
the
up,
state
guys.
That it's in.
And, you know, I just don't understand what they're thinking. And, you know, you've got two sides of it that continue to have this very public argument, and it's only about money. And that's honestly a shame, because if you read the actual document that Major League Baseball proposed, some of the changes that they're insisting on, like you can't even throw the ball around to other people in between batters. Like we're asking baseball players who are creatures of routine to completely change everything they do about their routine. So I think there should have been some real and valid conversations about how safe it is and what the real thought is about it and how attainable this document is. But instead, it's become wholly about money. And I genuinely believe that if Major League Baseball can't work this out monetarily, if they can't find a happy medium, and, you know, every insider I talk to is totally different. Jesse Rogers joined me last week. He said he thinks we have baseball by 4th of July, but Buster Olney joined me on Friday, said he's not really positive that we're going to get baseball at all this year. And if we don't, and it's because of money, generations of fans will never forgive Major League Baseball for turning their back because of money on a country that needed them so much.
I mean, don't you think this is just ass backwards? I mean, a sport that is so obviously losing its footing in the American sports conscious, right? A sport that is so clearly, you know, really devoid of that young fan, you know, like there's no next generation. Like, don't you think the approach should be, let's beat everybody back so we can show everybody what, when all the world will be watching us, all the eyes will be on us, let's show the world what our product is and how great it is. Shouldn't that be the approach instead of the one they're taking now, which seems like, you know, just greed?
Yeah, 1,000%. I mean, that's what UFC figured out. That's what NASCAR figured out. I think that's why hockey announced their plans so quickly, just to get ahead of the NBA. I think everybody else has figured that out. And for Major League Baseball, it feels like you're watching a bad reality show where the players are convinced they can make the owners look bad, and the owners are convinced they can make the players look bad. And in the meantime, they've all forgotten that all they're doing is making everybody in the room look awful. And that's the weirdest part about it to me. It's like watching The Real Housewives of Orange County and trying to figure out how these women don't understand that they all look terrible in these scenes. And that's what this is at this point.
Yeah.
Hey, Fitz, you're the best, man.
Well said, Fitzy.
Thank you,
Appreciate you, man, for
coming on and sharing your insights with us every single week, man. Appreciate it.
Brand new Lamborghini, a cop car. With a pistol on my hip like I'm a cop. Yeah. Ever met a real rock star?
Van Lathan is with The Ringer. He's the host of the Higher Learning Podcast. Rachel Lindsay, you can hear that on Apple Podcasts with The Ringer. He's a friend of the show, and he joins us now. Van, how you feeling, man? What's going on?
I'm feeling good. I'm not feeling... I'm feeling pretty good. I'm feeling inspired for all the right reasons. I think I'm feeling afraid for all the right reasons. I also think that I'm feeling a slight degree of vindication. Mm. And when I say vindication, I mean, no one wants to see the country on fire. There's a lot of collateral damage happening right now. A lot of things that are going wrong. But if you are from a specific community or of a specific mindset, like, you realize that there was a lot done to prevent us from getting to where we were where we are right now. A lot done. And there was a lot of people, there were a lot of warnings, there were a lot of signs, there were a lot of people trying to urge the status quo and the powers that be that this was an inevitability if these things weren't taken a hard look at and really, really addressed. And you were just never given a voice. And now that it's come to pass, you want a quick resolution of it. You want everyone to be safe. But more than anything, you want to build new structures and systems that address these systemic problems.
Van, does it feel like we've finally got white people's attention? Bomani said something this morning that struck me. I wonder if you agree. And I wrote it down. Said, for one reason or another, this has struck white people in a much different way from the past, obviously, I think he said, which is a good thing because I think it makes it more likely that something substantive can come out of this, because quite honestly, people listen to y'all in a way they don't listen to me. I just wonder how much of you, you know, how much of that that encouraged feeling you've got is that we finally, hopefully finally, we've got their attention?
Yeah, I mean, look, getting their attention is one thing. Getting the attention of mainstream America is one thing. But I will tell you this, the most hopeful thing was not even about getting the attention of anyone who wasn't involved. It was about who is involved. Any of the places that I've been, and any of the protests that I've seen, and any of the stuff I've witnessed on the street, it is shockingly diverse.
Yes.
Don't get me wrong. It is Black Americans that are leading this and Black Americans who answered this call. But the support that is out on the streets, if anything is going to get the attention of white America, it's the fact that it's their sons and daughters that are out there, backing this stuff up and really being involved. There is a huge swath of this country that is simply saying no. And they're saying no loudly, and they're saying no in ways that really have even been surprising to me. Now, once again, this has to be met with systemic change. This has to be met with actual work and actual action. But for right now, you know, as sad as this is, I'm encouraged.
I'm encouraged too, man. And I say that as a white person. Because like I think about my wife, I think about sort of the people that are in my immediate orbit who happen to be white, and you know, I guess you don't really ever truly know who people are, but I mean I have those conversations, you know, and I know none of them include hate or prejudice, or again, I know it's out there, it exists obviously, but I do feel like the younger, I'm 28, you know, I came up in a different time, and that, you know, I'm sort of part of the next generation, right, of adults. And so I'm encouraged, too. And I said this last week, like, maybe I'm naive for that. But, like, I think in 15 or 20 years, like, we're going to be so much closer as a, you know, as a country to where we want to be. I'm with you, man. I feel optimistic about what the future holds.
Yeah, I mean, look, no one should begrudge the fact that you're encouraged. I mean, no one wants to feel negative energy for the sake of feeling negative energy. This is not pouting. Like, no one is pouting right now. If there are reasons to be encouraged, I invite everyone to find those reasons, identify them, and then find some encouragement. This isn't a temper tantrum. This isn't going to tear up your room because your parents gave you a curfew. This is a sea change. And in the sea change, or in any type of change that's going to happen, you have to take positivity and you have to take progress where you can. This isn't about, like, sitting around being mad for the sake of being mad. Hopefully this is pointed, and hopefully this ends up becoming something that we can point to, a moment that we can point to, a time that we can point to, that things actually did change. So, brother, if you're encouraged, wave that encouragement around. Like, spread it. If there's any positivity that you can, spread it. Spread anything that looks genuine, anything that's happening that looks like it's real, not propaganda and photo ops and things of that nature.
Right.
But when people come together, make sure people know that that's important, too. There's nothing wrong with that.
Is it as intense as it was this weekend, Van, if the other three officers had been arrested? And I keep hearing this other side that says, well, they got to get the case airtight. With cops, it takes a little longer. I don't know how much more you need to see with that video, and I just wonder, and it'll always be a what if, right, how much of this, but and there will always still be protesters out there, but is it as intense as it was across the country if these three other officers have been, because, Van, we've been arrested for probable cause. They make the case later. They're here. In this case, they got, you know, everything's on video. Are you surprised that we're at this point? I think it's been, what, a week now that the other three haven't been arrested? Or maybe it's no surprise at all, Van, to ask that question.
No, I mean, it's no surprise at all that they haven't been arrested. I think that's kind of business as usual. I think the to answer your question, yeah, I think what people are protesting more than anything is they're protesting the status quo,
right,
and kind of how this always happened. And they're demanding different outcomes, so they're probably doing some different things. And, you know, let's be honest, there's collateral damage in that. There's a lot of people right now that are suffering the loss of businesses, that are suffering the loss of money and finances, who to be honest with you, probably are on the side of the protesters. However, I can't stress this enough. The old way didn't work.
Right.
Like we talk about, people talk about, there's been a buzzword that's been going on, and it's peacefully protesting, right? Oh, well, you guys, there's people that are peacefully protesting, there are people who are not peacefully protesting. And this has been done to death, but I have to do it. Corporate America rejected peaceful protests once the NFL signed Colin Kaepernick. 100%. That was a rejection of peaceful protests. That was saying that's not good enough. We're still mad that you guys are saying something about it. We're still going to dictate the way you express the angst and the problems and the fear that you have about living here in America. If you don't do it the way we want you to do it, then we don't want you to do it at all. When they sent that out, yep, people listened. See, because here's the thing. If they don't listen, we do. See, we have to listen because we have to be continuously adaptable in order to survive here. So we listen. Okay, that's not going to work. That's not what you want. All right, well, here's the other side of it. And even if it's not that intentional, that's how the messaging came out. And this right here is way more dangerous than what Cap was trying to do. But once again, here we are. I don't understand how anyone thought that it was going to be any different than what it is.
Van, what do you make of it? Because I see this, I mean, are you on Facebook? Do you have a Facebook page?
I do not.
Okay, well, you're that's a good decision. because it is really frustrating. Right. You know, it is really frustrating because you see people say things like, I agree that George Floyd was murdered, but, like I see so many of people who are on my friends list. And, you know, we do radio here, and it's a very local thing, and you have people who just want to be your friend on Facebook. You don't necessarily know these people in person, but you see that a lot. And they will then and it happens every time. Like, there is a certain segment of the population, I will say mostly white people, who try to rationalize, or just really oppose a part of what is happening. So in this particular instance, it is, I agree that George Floyd was murdered, but that does, I disagree with the looting. Is there any value to that sentence at all? Why do people feel the need to say things like that?
Okay. I mean, like, look, it's America. I'm not going to get on people and say what they can't say and whatever, obviously. I'll tell you why there's no value to the sentence to me. And I think that what's happening to a lot of different, I think that it's sad and I think that it's unfortunate, but I want people to remember where it is that they live. You live in the United States of America, right? Well, why do you live in the United States of America? Like, a real question, like, why do you live here? Why is this called the United States of America? Why does the country exist? The country exists because it used to be a different place, right? Way long time ago, it was a place where there was a structure that governed colonists that live here. Now, over time, those colonists deviated in culture and experience from the people that governed them, right? They became American. There was a huge ocean separating them. They start to talk different. They start to walk different. They start to believe different. They start to understand their world in a different way. And what they realized after living here on their own for a while was that they needed more from the people that were governing them if that relationship was to be meaningful to them. Hey, don't tax us and not give us a voice. We're a far and separated from you. We're giving you the authority to govern us, but we just want to be able to talk back to you when we need something. No taxation without representation. That government refused those people. They said no. They say you are subjects of us. You work for us. You do what we say. Now, what did those colonists do? They then said no. And how did they say no? They took tea and they dumped it into a harbor in Massachusetts. Mm-hmm. That's what they did. So what they did was they said, not only are we so fed up that we are going to try to, because they tried it a peaceful way at first. They asked for no taxation without representation. They tried to get that, right? After they didn't do that, they had to hurt that major power economically. And they did it by destroying their property because it's really the only thing they could do. Now, that led to full-scale them taking up arms, and we know where we are now. Mm-hmm. What we don't want is to get it to that point. But this right here, what you're watching, is one of the more American things that you've ever seen before in your life. It's in a real way, factually, the way the country was started. I want it to stop. I want to be able to get back to peace and negotiation and understanding. But I understand that sometimes to get there, you have to be here.
That's why they call it the Higher Learning Podcast, Van. It's a good name. It's a really good name. That's the most entertaining history lesson I've had probably ever. So thank you for that.
Van, let me
go ahead. My bad.
I was going to ask you, because we talked about it right before you came on. Did you want to hear from the president this weekend? There's a couple of different schools of thought on this. I said, well, if it's the right message, right, because we've seen him put gasoline on things, and it just exacerbates the situation. But were you hoping to hear from your president this weekend?
No, I wasn't. I wasn't hoping to hear from him. But interesting. Good question. I wasn't hoping to hear from him, but he still should have said something.
Mm-hmm. So you expected him. Yes.
He's the president.
Not even expected. Not even wanted. But he should have. It's his duty. Mm-hmm. Like I've been told from all the Trump supporters and people who support President Trump, what a patriot President Trump is, right? Mm-hmm. And I don't understand how you can love America and see your country that you love on fire and be the leader and not have anything to say to Americans about it. I've never been the president. It's a hard job. And I don't know how things go there or what you're supposed to do and all whatever. But I don't see how you're the president.
This seemed like the
time.
You
see the country on fire, yes, and you're hiding in a bunker. It just doesn't add up to me. So there you have it. I mean, that speaks volumes to me.
Do you feel like right now, in terms of professionally, Van, you're doing I guess I'm looking for the long answer on this. I know there's a short one. And look, you're the guy that told Kanye, no, man, I got to talk to you on that. So I always know you'd speak freely no matter on what platform. But my gosh, man, it feels like you're doing the work you're supposed to be doing right now. How liberating is it with the podcast, everything you're doing? There's always more, right? We're all trying to find our purpose. But it feels like you're on your way, Van. How's it feel from the inside?
It feels like I wish I had something different to talk about.
I hear you.
But
it's important we hear you, but you realize how important it is for us to hear you on this.
Oh, yeah, I get you, brother. I understand, but, once again...
We shouldn't
again,
have to be doing this.
I mean, I get it. I understand, and I'm happy to do it, but,
I feel you.
I've known American soldiers before. I come from a military family, and I knew guys that, the bravest people in the world are the people that are willingly going over to places like Fallujah and Afghanistan and taking care of business that we are free to have these conversations. And I don't want everyone to ever feel like I don't respect those men or even respect people who put their lives in danger for the safety of society all the time. I don't. Those people are brave. Nobody wants to do it. Nobody wants to be in that situation. And the sacrifice that those gentlemen make is those gentlemen and women make, it far exceeds anything that we do in our lives.
Sure.
I think that's a completely different thing.
Yep.
But I'm saying even those people who are that honor bound, they don't want to have to hurt anyone. They don't want to have to be in a position where they put themselves out there. They don't want to have to do that stuff. So, I kind of look at this situation as I wish none of this was happening, and I would give back any adulation or whatever that I would get just to have George Floyd back. Or Breonna Taylor back, or Ahmaud Arbery back,
amen to that.
Or Mike Brown back, or Tamir Rice back, or Eric Garner back, or any of those people back. So there you have it. Sandra Bland. I could go on.
Yeah.
The podcast is Higher Learning. It's worth your time. Van,
Thank you, brother. You're
the best. Love you, man. Thank you for this.
Love you guys, man. Hopefully we'll be talking sports, pretty soon. We never really got a chance to talk about Wiseman and all of that stuff that happened.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, we'll get there eventually. We'll get there eventually.
Hopefully, we will, bro.
Yeah,
y'all will. Stay safe and stay together. I love y'all, man.
Yeah, appreciate man. Love you, man. You too. Thank you, man. Appreciate you, man. Bye. He is Van Lathan, from The Ringer. Man, I love that guy. I love his thoughts. Every time we talk to him, I just think he has
No, he's right. I mean, he's absolutely right. Maybe it sounds good coming out, you know, what I'm saying and all that, but to his point, I'd rather not be doing this. And yeah, I get where he's coming from completely. But man, that brother is profound.
Yes, he is.
And you wish that, you know, like we said, when it comes to getting the country to stop and acknowledge, you have to have some way to get their attention.
Yep.
And guys like Van, you can hear it coming out of them. They sound like leaders.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying? And so that's why I so much appreciate him. I think he's in a perfect spot. And just hope for continued success for him.
Don't miss the Jason and John Show tomorrow at 11 a.m. on 92.9 FM ESPN.